in the morning. When you want the news, you need the front page every hour on the Press Box.
Nothing's riding on this except the First Amendment of the Constitution, freedom of the press, and maybe the future of the country. Not that any of that matters.
And now, the news.
What do you think? I know Seidel is excited about this in the building, but the Rockets planning to recruit Jimmy Butler to push the Sixers to a sign and trade that would allow the All-Star forward to join Harden and Paul in Houston. League sources have told Woj at ESPN the Rockets don't have the salary cap space to sign Butler, so they need the threat of a Sixers losing him for nothing to a team with the available room to motivate Philly into a trade. The Rockets would potentially need to make this a multi-team deal to satisfy the rules based on year compensation that would cover the outgoing salary. But there's a big but here. The Sixers plan to be aggressive in signing Butler to a new deal. They can offer the full five-year, $190 million offer. The Sixers could also go shorter term with him at four for $146.5 if he wanted that. What do you think about this? This is interesting. We heard about the discontent between Chris Paul and James Harden of late and how they're not getting along. But now Woj drops a bomb that they're going to go hard at the Sixers to try to facilitate a two-for-one and get Jimmy Butler.
This is, I mean, this makes Houston the front runner to me to win the title if they make this deal.
If they get Jimmy Butler
because
on the sign and trade?
They already have five returning starters, and now you get Jimmy Butler. They're 9-1 currently in the NBA future odds around town. I would hammer that. You know, for Houston to come out and to really go and make something like that happen, that makes them a lot. They're going to be fun as heck to watch. But at the same time, they're going to have that one solid guy that's going to provide some defense. And maybe he's like the cornerstone to like maybe be the right mix for that Rockets team, that the guy that can kind of put it all together. It might be Jimmy Butler. And at the same time, how much does that weaken the Sixers? Do the Sixers, without Jimmy Butler, really scare you or really tell you like, wow?
Well, if Kawhi goes back to Toronto, I don't know if the Sixers even scare me with him.
Right.
Like, I mean, you know, with I think if Kawhi goes back to Toronto, Toronto and Milwaukee are both better than the Sixers. So if this happens, Woj said Butler would be eligible to sign four-year 140 with the Rockets, but Houston likely would need to include two players in the deal, two of these three, Clint Capella, Eric Gordon, and PJ Tucker, to make the financials work. So they're going to lose something on the other end if they do a sign and trade for Jimmy Butler, but it's Jimmy Butler. So if you're adding him, you know, Jimmy Butler on most lists has been the favorite to be the three-headed monster with LeBron and AD. That's kind of been, everyone's kind of been, you know, they're doing all these lists now of where everyone thinks everyone's going. Kawhi actually is the favorites, kind of emerged as Toronto, that he'll go back for a 1-1, he'll sign a 2-year deal, one to get out if he wants. But Jimmy Butler, every list I've seen from these guys in the NBA has Jimmy Butler going to LA. And, you know, that would be a nice, I don't think it's a consolation prize. I mean, I think you want Kawhi, but if you can't get Kawhi, you want Jimmy Butler. The other thing I wanted to ask you about this, which was interesting, if Kyrie goes to Brooklyn, Mr. Russell back to L.A., D'Angelo Russell back to L.A., and here's the thing. Like, Tristan asked me last night, my son came home, he goes, would he go back? I said, look, here's the thing about pro athletes. They have Anthony Davis and LeBron now. Yes, there were hard feelings, and yes, he never wanted to be moved out of there, and I think D'Angelo Russell always thought he was going to be a lifetime Laker. I get that, but things happen. It's business, man. You get moved or whatever happens. Yeah, he'd go back. You wouldn't go back to L.A. with that kind of marketing if you've already proven yourself a really, really good player in this league, and now there's no ball there. You're going back. You're being the guy running the team. I'd go back there in a second. Who cares that they got rid of it? That stuff's old hat, man. Go back. You got Anthony Davis and LeBron.
You go back and you say thanks.
Yeah, thanks, and now thanks. I'm going to come lead you.
I got a bunch of toys to play with. Yeah.
You're going to stay there if Kyrie comes, because you know Kyrie's going to come and take some of your stuff and your minutes and everything. I'd go back. If I'm Russell, I go back in a second to that team.
Oh, you'll be hailed as a hero now.
He's a really good player in Brooklyn. I mean, I think, you know, look, I think it's been proven at this point between Russell and Ball, they didn't have the best of the two. I mean, the better of those two was in Brooklyn. So you get him back now and you match him with LeBron and AD. Yes, I'd go back. I don't have any problem with that if I'm him. I mean, you know, you got to go back to the West Coast. So you're back into better weather. I mean, you're marketing. You've proven yourself as a very good player in this league. And now you go with those two dudes? I'd go back in a second if I was like, who cares what happened before? That stuff's old. You just want to win, man. You just want to get paid and you want to win. It doesn't, all the other stuff, who cares?
what else was happening in Boston is that the we heard the Danny Ainge comments yesterday of how, just in his own way, it was definitely throwing shade at Kyrie Irving, as he was saying, you know, we're looking for a player who understands that he has to be, you know, into a role. We want guys that can get along with others. As now, Mark Stein of the New York Times reported that Kemba Walker is emerging as a stealth suitor for the Celtics. Stein later went on to say that Boston, along with the Mavericks, are now at the front of the line for teams trying to sign Walker away from the Hornets. Okay, so you know what? This is a last chance gasp at surviving in the East and making sure that this process you've been working on for so long with Brad Stevens comes out, and it might be this player might be the one that kind of pushes you over, or so they hope. That Kemba Walker is the answer.
We talked about this yesterday. I've never seen a team whose perceived window opened and closed as fast as this one, given who they might lose now and who they were supposed to have and get 2 years ago. I told you this yesterday. I thought 2 years ago Boston was going to be the best team in the NBA by now. And for whatever reasons, injuries, who they're going to lose, what happened to Hayward, all of that, guys who have already opted out, that window might be shut for the foreseeable future. Again, a lot of this hinges on Kawhi. If he goes back to Toronto, obviously Toronto's better than Boston. We already, I think, can say Milwaukee's better than Boston.
Yep.
I think we can say Philly's better than Boston at this point. You know, Boston, you might be fourth best in the East right now, depending on what happens in free agency. And you might even slip more depending on what happens over the next month when free agency opens. So, yeah, you're right. That's something like that has to happen for them, I think, for them to be to remain relevant. Now, again, Kawhi goes to L.A., a lot of that stuff changes. Obviously, Toronto suddenly is not nearly as good as they could be. They can't run it back without Kawhi, so they're not going to go win it next year without him. But yeah, I think Celtics, that is a huge team to watch in the next few weeks, because they could really go from, you know, middle of the pack East to make the playoffs, losing the 4-5, 3-6 game, to really be in contention, depending on what happens. Did you get this Andre Iguodala interview? Did you listen to this?
Yeah, from the Breakfast Club.
Yeah, this is interesting. He touched on a lot of subjects. One of the talking points was how his leg injury during the 18 playoffs was actually a fracture rather than a bone bruise. Iguodala, everyone's feeding stuff in our head. When's Kevin Durant coming back? Last year it happened to me. I missed the last three games of the Houston series. It goes 7. We barely get out. Now they're looking at me like, when are you coming back? I had a fractured leg, but it's being out there. It's like he's got a bone bruise. I'm fighting with this team. I'm fighting with people. I'm fighting with the media. Then my teammates ask me today, hey, how you feeling? How you feeling? Iguodala missed the final four games of the 18 Western Conference Finals against the Houston Rockets and the first two games of the finals against the Cavaliers with a leg injury. Warriors medical staff received criticism during this year's NBA Finals against the Raptors when Durant ruptured his Achilles early in the second quarter of Game 5. Iguodala also discussed former Warriors head coach Mark Jackson. Now, this was interesting. Whom he believes is being blackballed by the NBA because of his politics.
Mm-hmm.
This is Iguodala. We were huge fans of Mark the Players. He was the ultimate players coach. He was one of my favorite coaches of all time. He's going to put you in the best position to get the most money. The Warriors fired Jackson in May of 2014 after first-round playoff exit. Owner Joe Lacob was very critical of the way Jackson built his coaching staff and said Jackson couldn't get along with anybody in the organization. Iguodala also touched on how the Warriors' success affected some of their audience because we priced our real fans out. As the Silicon Valley millionaires could afford the premium seats for casual fans. This was really, really interesting in terms of his interview. He's got a book, so you know he's on the book tour. But he let loose here. He's not one of these guys who writes a book and then like doesn't say anything. It's one of these books where he's taking a lot of people to task, including people in his own organization. So I mean, I think he's got a lot to say. And again, when you're Andre Iguodala and you have rings and you have millions and you're fine for the rest of life and you're this point in your career, it's probably an okay time to do this. I don't know if 22-year-old Andre Iguodala writes this book and says this stuff.
No, the Chicago Bulls, Andre Iguodala is not going to write this.
He's not writing this stuff. No. But, you know, he's at a point in his career where, you know, he's in the north end. He's season to season now, if he has any left at all. He's season to season. This is the time guys like this have a better chance of writing something like this and saying something like this. That's really at the end of the day, they don't give a damn. They have their rings and their money.
Haven't you wondered why, like, a guy like Mark Jackson, who's won 52, 53 regular season games and kind of helped propel the foundation of the Warriors, why he hasn't been, like, lured to coach any other NBA team? Come on, man. There are so many retreads that go in and throughout this league. I mean, Hell, Eddie Jordan's getting got jobs like for no reason after losing in Washington for all those years. So this is just a little taste of the Breakfast Club interview with Andre Iguodala, where he expresses that Mark Jackson is being blackballed because of his views on homosexuality.
One particular issue was, from what I heard, was his views on gender or marriage or what the Bible said on your sexuality.
Okay.
And our head of our business, who he just went in the Hall of Fame, he was one of the he was the brains behind All-Star Weekend. Like, this dude, he created the All-Star Weekend. Rick Welts, like, genius business. And he celebrated as one of the top execs in sports on the business side, and he's gay. So there was conflicts with that. That was, you know, widespread. Everyone was talking about that.
Rick Welts, openly gay, president of Golden State Warriors. And if this is true, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if Mark can fault anyone but himself. But at this point, maybe we know further why Mark hasn't landed on a gig, and he's not even like in the short list.
This is why I absolutely believe every word he just said, and what you and I were talking about the other day with Mark Seidel, who, by the way, I just retweeted. If you have not given a listen, go to my Twitter page at Ed Graney and listen to the interview Adam Candy and Mark Seidel and Chrissy had yesterday with Israel Gutierrez, the gay reporter, about a lot of this in terms of the community within sports and being gay. Cofield and Company yesterday, I just retweeted the article, the interview. Go listen to that. It was an incredible job by those guys and Chrissy for booking that. Okay, this is why I completely agree with Mark Jackson. With Andre Iguodala. Mark Jackson produced as a coach. Like you said, Clay, 50-something wins during, you know, years there in Golden State. In this world, when you win as a coach, you will continue to get gigs. Mark Jackson's never gotten another gig. Now you tell me why. This stuff with the gay employees and his feelings against gays, and what we heard a lot about him with the faith-based, the Christianity. Nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying that people have talked about this. We're not making this up. Players have talked about this who were on his team. Now they did say they were never forced to go to service or forced, but there was definitely a realm of faith-based Christianity. Mark Jackson's inherent values around his team. There's no question about that. It's been written about. It's been talked about. But now we're going to the issue of the gay employee and how he felt. And I'm telling you, I completely believe what Iguodala says, because if there wasn't something like that, this dude would have gotten a ton of job offers by now. You do not win 50 games in the NBA as a head coach and then get blackballed.
Never.
Because you're a bad guy. There's a lot of bad guys who are coaches. They don't care about that. They're like, can you win? It has to be something like this that organizations would say behind closed doors, no chance. We can't go down that road. We can't bring that to our fans. We can't bring that in 2018, 19, 17, 16, forever. He was passed over for jobs. There are going to be fans of the LGBT community of any organization, and they're going to say, you know what? Every time you hire a coach, what is it about? It's about risk-reward. What's the risk? What's the reward? We probably can find someone to do what Mark Jackson does and not have this issue. We're not hiring Mark Jackson. He would have been hired by now. There's no chance Mark Jackson would have not had a job by now if this wasn't a serious issue of which Iguodala is talking about in terms of his feelings about gays.
And I don't
There's no way.
I don't think it's just apparent just with one organization or one franchise. I think the entire league is feeling this way because we know Adam Silver's stance on acceptance and tolerance. Mark Jackson may never coach again. You know,
Look, the NBA, all professional leagues, you have to know this, are very tight within their quarters of knowing everything. Everyone talks, everyone gossips. You know everything about anyone, especially if you're hiring a guy to be the head coach of your organization. This is well known about Mark Jackson throughout this league. Andre Iguodala, I don't think, broke some kind of huge news story saying that Mark Jackson has been known to have these feelings behind the scenes about gays. That's not something I think Andre Iguodala said, boy, I better not say this. No one ever knows this. It is known within the league. And if it's known within the league, you now know why a guy who won 50-plus games doesn't have a job. Because a guy who wins 50-plus games, he can be a bad guy. He can be a jerk to the media. He can be all this stuff. But they'll hire him if he wins 50-plus games because they just want to win. It's all about winning. So it's not like the guy couldn't coach. It'd be one thing if this guy won like 8 games a year. Like, that guy's just a stiff. He can't coach. He can coach, but he had all this other stuff where you're like, if I'm an owner, I'm like, do I want that PR hit? You know, mm-hmm. it goes back. It's like, you know, it was like the Tebow situation. Anyone that brings anything religiously, politically, socially, it's always risk-reward. And when you run hundreds of millions of billion-dollar organizations, I don't have a problem with it. Those are big-time financial decisions about your organization. You have to have those discussions. You can't just willy-nilly say, oh, it's no big deal, let's just hire him. No, you have to think, how's this going over with the fan base? What about when Michael Vick came back? Go back to Michael Vick and the dogs. How did that do him when he came back? No, organizations. What's happened with Colin Kaepernick? You can agree or disagree with all these socialists we're talking about. We're just saying is when they have one of these issues, it comes into the play whether you get another job or not.
Hey, what happened to Donald Sterling? He owned a team.
Exactly, and look what happened to him.
And they removed him.
You're out.
Yeah.
You're not going to represent our brand because our brand's going to suffer, which means, guess what? I'm making less money, and that's not going to happen because you're an idiot. That's not happening. You know, I'm not, as an owner, going to hire you, Mark Jackson, and have people, you know, on the day I hire my coach and I want everyone to feel good and hold a press conference, I have to look outside and there's 1,000 people picketing. Why would I want that? I can go get a dude who can coach and who won't bring me pickets, who will bring me a bunch of joy from fans. So Iguodala in saying this, I totally believe this because it's like you said it best the other day in the hall when we were talking with Mark Seidel. There had to be something. When you win as many games as Mark Jackson did, you just don't disappear off people's radar as a coach. I mean, Bill Fitch, how many people have been were rechanneled through the washing machine of coaches in the NBA? They're total retreads. There's guys retreads all the time.
Doug Collins could have got a job again. I mean, it's ridiculous. They love to keep those old guys in the fold. They stick around forever.
Absolutely, because it's always, you go with the younger guy, it's always a risk. No, let's go with Jimmy. Jimmy's, you know, he's won 800 games. Now he's lost 1,200, but Jimmy's been around. You know, that's how you hire coaches. So you got a guy like Mark Jackson who was still relatively young and who had won games, and all of a sudden he can't get a job. No, why is that? It's not because he's, you know, dropping F-bombs all the time. There has to be something. And even, now we know what it is.
Even one with the Knicks. It's the Press Box Morning Show here on a beautiful and perfect Wednesday. Let's take a break because when we do, we'll come back at the bottom of the hour with Vegas Golden Knights General Manager Kelly McCrimmon here on the Press Box Morning Show.
Start your engines!
8:24. On a Wednesday, we have an accident on 15 southbound after Charleston. Right shoulder is blocked there. We also have a crash in Lake Mead westbound before I-15 with the center lane blocked. And on the strip, Las Vegas Boulevard northbound at Spring Mountain or Sands Avenue. Right lane's blocked there. We also have an accident on Ann Road west of El Capitan.
Time to start planning for the...
Remember back in the good old days in 1959? The Welcome to Las Vegas sign was built. And Terrible Herbst opened in the Vegas Valley? That's right, folks! Terrible Herbst has been in the Vegas Valley for 60 years. And to say thank you, we're gonna do something crazy. We're gonna give away gas for 60 cents a gallon. Download the app to find out where and when first. We're calling it Throwback Terribles. It's all part of our Terribles 60-year celebration.
Face off right side. Will Carlson takes it with Riley Smith and Marchessault alongside. Smith controls, shoots, tipped in front. They score! Will Carlson! Vegas takes the lead. 1-0 with 9:15 to go in the first period.
It's the Press Box on ESPN 1100 and 100.9 FM.
Back on the Press Box, it's a Wednesday. Tomorrow, J.R. Starkus. Don't know what he'll have in store, but it's going to be good. And the
4th of July cocktails.
Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, yeah.
You know this stuff before I do.
You and he
get together, you make high level decisions, and then I have no idea what's happening.
Well, I know it's going to
be good, but 4th of July cocktails that's tomorrow right. with J.R. Starkus. That's going to be awesome. You'll be gone next week.
I know, I'm sorry.
Well, what can you do? But we're going to have, you're going to be gone next week, Wednesday, Friday, and then the following week. And one of the days you're out, Benjamin Goetz is going to sit in on a Thursday.
Oh, sweet. Really?
And I told him, as the Minnesota kid, your main challenge is to stump Starkus with some kind of weird Midwest Minnesota bizarre bowling alley cocktail that nobody would even want to know about. And we'll do that. Like, the Minnesota kid's going to come
right.
in. and he's going to have to stump Starkus. I said, that's your challenge. I said, and it's a hard challenge to stump this guy.
Where you have to, like, drink it out of a bowling shoe or
yes,
something
or
like that, right?
Like when I went to the Bills game with Chuck Sinicki and Ron the Pinto Man, I drank shots out of the bowling ball with the Buffalo Bills fans there in the parking lot. It was awesome. It was a great, great time. They drink the shots out of the bowling ball. I had a few shows.
That one guy was covered in mustard and ketchup.
Yes. I mean, complete lunatics. Yeah. I didn't do that, but I did drink out of the bowling ball. All right. We're waiting for Kelly McCrimmon, the GM of the Vegas Golden Knights, to call in. Hopefully we can track down Kelly. What's going on here? I know the development camp. It doesn't start until later this morning. We can't have this.
They were we have one show in the press box. He's like, forget it.
Where's this guy? I mean, they're chasing him around City Nationals. Is he down there getting one of those hot shots?
No,
with peppermint and whip that I get all the time.
He talked to us a couple months ago, and he's fed up. He's done. He's done with us.
I mean, you know, whoa. There's a red button coming. This might be it. Come on. Here we go. Going to get Kelly McCrimmon up here, the Vegas Golden Knights general manager. Development camp started yesterday. The main press conference, obviously, though, was William Karlsson, 8 years, 47.2. He's in the fold. I think they were very happy about that. They appeared very happy about that. William Karlsson's very happy about that, as I believe is this man. We're joined now live by Vegas Golden Knights general manager Kelly McCrimmon here in the press box. Hi, Kelly. How are you?
I'm doing real well. How are you doing?
Good. Let's go to the press conference yesterday when you guys introduced William. He seemed very happy. When you're negotiating deals, I think in most sense, it's always about leverage, who has which, you know, which side has the most and who has what the other person wants most. It does appear in what he said in statements his agent has made that the marching orders to the agent was, don't mess this up. I'm really happy here. I love this place. I'm staying here. And it appears the agent did his job and got him the long-term deal. When you guys are on the other side of that, how much does that help you get what you want in terms of, like, we want this guy locked up long-term and we understand he wants to be here?
Well, there's still a business case involved when it comes to those type of negotiations. But I think that any negotiation goes more smoothly when both sides want the same thing.
Yeah.
So, to your point, William really enjoys Las Vegas, loves the organization, his teammates, and we recognize how valuable he is to our team, how good a person he is, and again, I think both sides came out of this very pleased.
How important also is it, and George McPhee said this yesterday, he said he shows up, he works, he has something to eat, and he goes home. And he's one of your best players. Can you speak to the importance? I mean, you're dealing with 20-something guys in a town where, and we've heard stories, you know, we've had stories about the Raiders in our paper about, you know, when you come into this town now, it's a different place, where you live, what the social things that are available to pro athletes. And the way they described William Karlsson is, how important is it when you have someone this low maintenance, who's this good, who you don't have to worry about at all other than just he does his job?
Well, it's always good for an organization when your best players are great people.
Right.
And, you know, zero maintenance is exactly how I would describe Will. And then add to that just the consistency of his performance day in, day out, whether it's practice or games. You get a tremendous effort from him, and he delivers. So when you look at building a team, when your top guys carry themselves that way, I think that it goes a long way, towards impacting the balance of your team. And, you know, with respect to Las Vegas and the temptations that are out there, you know, our entire team lives in Summerlin. I think they love living in this area. I think they enjoy that we're in the entertainment capital of the world, so that shows and great restaurants, great entertainment are only 20 minutes away. But day to day, it's pretty quiet where everybody out here lives and works.
Golden Knights, Kelly McCrimmon here with us on the Press Box Morning Show. And with that design in mind, when you began the expansion draft, you were looking for great personality and character traits, not only for guys that were going to be low maintenance, but maybe players that liked playing with each other. And I think that's what you get, because is this the end result now of that expansion draft, that you've now created a core foundation of players who love playing with each other?
I think when you look at the players that we now have under contract, it's a really good group. I've felt since day one that this team has always been greater than the sum of its parts, which speaks to the cohesiveness and the teamwork and team chemistry that you like to see in good organizations. And we've benefited from that. The players themselves have benefited from it, but also our team has been able to enjoy some success because of it.
Obviously, a lot of reporting around and talking about the cap, you know, as well as anyone, the cap and where you have to get to in the next several weeks. Or, there's deadlines to where you have to be and what you have to be at. I think that it's funny because I think, Kelly, a lot of people before you guys got here, there was not an understanding of what professional sports means. Sometimes it means crushing losses like Game 7 and what you went through. Sometimes it means winning a title. Only one team wins every year. Another big part of this is the salary cap era, and you're going to lose fan favorites. That's just going to happen. It's the reality of this world. Talk about that in terms of educating a fan base on, these are really hard decisions, but this happens everywhere, and this is just part of the deal. You're not going to always see every player you've always wanted to see for the rest of their career.
Well, there's going to be a little turnover from year to year, and we're at a different point in our evolution now, and that salary cap is a reality for us in terms of impacting our decisions. So we've got some hard decisions to make. We don't do that flippantly. We don't do that without recognizing that it's going to impact players and the fans who follow those players. But at the same time, that's what we need to do our jobs, to try to put the best team forward with the rules that we're dealing with. So make those decisions and become compliant, and at the same time we're going to feel pretty comfortable that we've got a darn good hockey team coming back for training camp in the fall.
And I would think that as hard as some of those decisions are, this is the position you want to be in. I mean, look, 2 years ago when you guys hit the ice, I don't think anyone outside ever believed you'd be in a position of 2 years later. You've been to a cup final, you've been to back-to-back playoffs, you're over the cap now, so now you have to make some hard decisions. My point is, it's not the worst place to be in. You have a really good team. You're going to have to make hard decisions, but you're a winning franchise, obviously much sooner than people had thought you'd ever be. So looking back on it, could you have believed if we said, look, in 2 years, this is the spot you're going to be in? I'm sure you'd have taken it, but would you have believed it?
No, the team has developed much differently than what we might have thought before we began the inaugural season. And I think you make a really good point that part of being a really good team in the NHL is you're going to be at or near the salary cap. Yeah. What you really, the mistakes that you can't make is you can't have regrettable contracts on your books, because those really handcuff you and limit, the potential of your team. We feel really good about the contracts that we have with the players on our team. They've played well, they've earned them, they deserve them, but I think at the same time we can still win with the contracts on our team, and that's obviously what it's about for the organization. We're trying to put the team in the best position to win.
When you look at the current roster and you think about the kids in Chicago, what kind of ideas do you feel like are there? How many players do you think that their window is open right now to maybe make a contribution to the opening day roster?
Well, this is probably the first year where we've got younger players that have been drafted or signed as free agents and have developed in Chicago that are wanting to push for full-time NHL jobs. So again, that's part of the evolution of the hockey club. We never had a draft until 2017, and those players have develop. We've had some free agent signings that we think have added some good young players into our organization. So that's imperative, to tie it back to the question that you spoke about the salary cap. If you're going to be a really good team, that you've got players that are getting paid, it really helps the process if you have some entry level contracts on your team from players that are able to contribute. So in the immediate term, that would be helpful, and certainly over the middle to long term, we want to make sure that we're in that position.
We've seen goalies in their mid-30s have terrific years and historic years. They don't all do that. We understand that north of a certain number age-wise, guys deteriorate. But when you have someone like Marc-Andre Fleury at 34, when you're making salary cap decisions, when you're making decisions, we need to push now. This is the window. We have these guys. We know we're good. There's a chance. How much does his ability to remain elite, I guess, play in other decisions? Does that ever happen? Do you ever take one player who's very important to you and say, look, here's the window now, so while we make these other moves, we have to keep thinking about this. If we're going to push now, we have to understand this is probably how much he has left at an elite level, or can you not make decisions based on, you know, I guess, guessing how good he'll be for how long?
Well, I understand the question, and, you know, certainly Marc-Andre is, you know, tremendously important to our team's success, and we're very fortunate to have, you know, a player of his ability, and then add to that his leadership and his character makes him a big, big part of our team.
Right.
We've never, ever talked about shaping the rest of our team based on any player's particular window.
Okay.
I think that we'll, you know, always be a team that's, you know, trying to build around a core of you know, good players. And that's you know, our focus now, and you know, we need Marc-Andre to continue to be a big part of that.
You know, over the weekend in Vancouver with the draft, what was it like for you to kind of like see all the kids and the families there on one end? Because you've been so connected to, with young families and young kids playing in the system, being with the Brandon Wheat Kings. But now you see all that hard work come to fruition. What's it like for you to sit back and see all of that emotion and all that happiness for a lot of these kids getting drafted? They finally get their moment in the sun. And what did you think about, like, you know, what do you value more for the draft, like speed or physicality?
Well, I've been to the draft, I think, for 30 straight years, and the last three, working for the Golden Knights and, you know, helping our staff prepare for the draft. And, you know, prior to that, as a member of the Brandon Wheat King organization that was going there, you know, feeling the highs and lows that your players go through on draft day, whether it's, you know, the thrill of being drafted in the first round, like Nolan Patrick or an Ivan Kovrov or a Braden Shen were, or sometimes players drop and go a little bit later than you thought. So I have a real appreciation for what families go through. It's a great honor when we draft a player to the NHL. We, you know, sure feel, and it's reality, that it's just the beginning of the process. There's so much that that will change, and you know, as time goes on, players have to hold up their end of the bargain in terms of their commitment. But it's you know, it's a really neat weekend, I think, for everybody in the industry.
Well, you know, you got development camp going on. The fans are out there; they're excited. Yesterday, some scrimmages later the week, as you guys go toward the summer, making these cap decisions into opening up training camp. So a lot going on with you. We understand that, but we certainly appreciate the time. Thanks, Kelly. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
There he is, Kelly McCrimmon. You're a GM of the Vegas Golden Knights. Yeah, they've got some decisions to make. Well, you know, probably 80. They're probably $7.5 million over the cap right now. They can do some things with expiring contracts, injured contracts, but they're going to have to make moves. I mean, trades are coming. If you listen to McPhee yesterday, they have to make moves. I mean, it is what it is, and you live in the reality of it. And the rest of, believe me, the rest of the league knows that. So when you're trying to deal, they know who has the leverage. They know you have to cut salary. I mean, you know, sometimes you're in that position. Sometimes you're in the other position of, you know, who has the leverage. But look, they have to make hard decisions.
Oh, well, the expectation even in year three would have to be younger players have to come up.
Yeah, and I think when you talk about you, whether it's the Nick Cage or the Cody Glasses, I mean, nowadays, this development camp,
yes,
the previous two, you're like, all right, those guys are going to make the team out of the training camp. Now you look at a Nick Hague or a Cody Glass, depending on who's traded here in the next several weeks. Now you're like, no, those dudes can make the team.
Those guys are going to replace guys.
They're going to be the replacements.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I wrote
there's
today.
There's no way around it. You just have to come and expect it.
Absolutely. One name that has been floated, I don't know if there's any truth, but it's been floated to several places, is Max Pacioretty. Now, Max Pacioretty makes $7 million a year. You're $7.5 over the cap. That's a big chump. But if you think, and that's why I asked him about the window, this, I'm just talking about this specific roster as we sit here today.
This one right now.
On June 26th.
If you need to make changes.
I think their window is 2 years to win a cup. Just this roster, without any changes. So if you believe that, do you move one of your top six forwards, or do you say, no, we're going to hope Fleury can be elite, and we're going to keep these top six, and we'll move other people, but we're going to make our run? If you believe that, I think that's what you do. I think you keep your top six intact, And, you know, Pacioretty was really streaky last year. He was hurt at times. He was streaky. But when he was good with Stastny, he was really good, and obviously Stone. So if you do that, that's great in terms of keep them together. If you move him, then are you telling us that you think Gusev is really, really good? You think you could move Gusev up and Cody Glass can make that team? There's a lot of moving parts there. But Max Pacioretty, you're probably never getting back the value you gave up, from which you gave up Tomas Tatar, which, by the way, to get Tomas Tatar, you gave up three draft picks, including a one. Plus, you gave up for Max Pacioretty, your top three prospect, and Nick Suzuki. So you gave up a lot. You're probably not getting that back for a 30, you know, for whatever he is, 30 or north of 30 forward who was streaky last year. So you have to make your decision. Do you hold on to Max Pacioretty, who you signed to a four-year contract extension, and just, you know, kind of hope he can score as much as he can over the life of the contract and be your, you know, a second-line guy? Or do you move him now, and that's a $7 million chunk that's overnight is gone? These are the decisions I think they're within their organization either have already made or are deciding to make. Or do you find that money elsewhere? Colin Miller here, a Cody Eakin here. You know, I think other than the core of Fleury, Carlson, Tuck, Marchessault, Stone, I wouldn't be... If you tell me tomorrow, Clay, this guy got traded and it wasn't one of those five, I won't blink. Like, I think everyone's on... I think when you have to cut salary, you have to listen to everything about everyone except the people you believe are your core, which would be Marchessault, Carlson, Fleury, Stone, Tuck. But anyone else who calls, you have to take the call. Look, you got to cut salary. If someone's going to offer something, doesn't mean you have to do the deal. But if Arizona, as is being reported, is calling on Max Pacioretty, I think you have to listen to them. And this whole thing about they're in the Pacific, I don't care if they, who cares? Just make the best deal for you. That's a bunch of nonsense. You know, they don't play San Jose again after December like 22nd this year. They play them like four times. Let's say they made a deal with San Jose. Who cares?
It would always feels like it would feels like it's just going to be like the death knell, like you're offering up the secrets of the Pentagon to the other team. Like,
it's 82 games. You trade within your division when you play people four times, or in this case Arizona five times. Nobody cares about that. That means nothing. This isn't in the NFL where you have 16 games and the season's over in a blink. It's a long season. You can trade within your division, and nobody cares about that stuff.
And at the same time, like, how many teams are going to be willing to take on that kind of contract willingly?
Well, there you go. All right, and that's the thing. That comes back to, if you want Max Pacioretty and you know they're in cap hurting and they have to cut, you're probably offering low. Like I said, they're not getting back for Max Pacioretty what they gave up for him. They're not getting that back at this point. There's no way. He was streaky. He was hurt. He played 60-something games. You know, he's in his 30s. There's no way they're getting that back. But I think you have to make the decision. Do you do so now and get the absolute most you can for him and cut the $7 million? Or if you hold on to him as he goes along each year, it'd be less and less, and then you probably are just holding on to him at that point and hoping, you know, you get what you can out of him for the extension and he plays really well and your second line's really good. I mean, I think, you know, but these are the decisions they're making. I think Colin Miller, he's in every story you read on the cap that he's going to be a guy moved. Now, he's not a huge salary, so they'd have to do more than Colin Miller. But you move Colin Miller, okay, here's a Nick Hague, you know, or Jake Bischoff, or, you know, other young defenders. You know, someone's going to have to come up for a lot less money. I do think they will re-sign England at a low rate. I think just PR-wise, I think Derek England will come back at a low rate. But others, I don't know. I mean, I think that's the thing fans here, I think, you know, I see on Twitter all the time. Not him,
if
not him.
If Derek England comes back, is he on the first line still?
England?
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
See, I don't know.
I mean, they paired him with Schmidt, and Schmidt's their best defensive player, so maybe they tried to kind of balance that out.
Yeah, but I mean,
can you sign Derek England and expect him to play 65-plus games? I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, you could sign him at a low rate and have him in the 50s maybe at this point in his career, which would allow yet another younger guy again to come up. And like Kelly was saying, I mean, on a salary cap issue, you need people like Nick Hague and Cody Glass at this point in their careers to make a lot less money, but to be able to produce. I mean, every team wants those. Not everyone can make $7 to $9 million a year. I mean, that's, you know, you have to have guys making $750,000 a year who you can throw into a game and expect to contribute. That's how good teams are built. You have to have those kind of guys. If you don't, then, you know, you're not a playoff team.
A Woj bomb was dropped during the middle of the McCrimmon interview. We will tell you more about what Woj says, and it has to do with Kevin Durant. Did he decline his player option, or did he take it? He declined it. We'll tell you about the ramifications next here on The Morning Show.
Start your engines!
15 southbound, we have a crash after Charleston. 15 southbound after Charleston, right shoulder blocked. We also have an accident on looks like Lake Mead westbound before I-15. Road construction causing a little bit of trouble now, and that's over on the transition ramps on 15 southbound at the Southern Beltway. And we also have traffic hazards on Decatur at Rome Boulevard and an accident on Ann Road west of El Capitan, as well as a crash on Fort Apache at Ann Road as well.
Time to start planning for the 2019 swim season. Call B&D Pool Plastering and remodel your tired-looking pool. With B&D's 2019 swim season pricing, beat the rush. For a free estimate, call B&D Pool.